Die groot trek saam Dopie Nina. Wees daar tussen 3 en 6.
Daar's 'n nuwe boek uit. Autopsietafel. Ek wil julle sê autopsie.
Autopsie.
Want dit is in Engels is dit.
Ja, autopsie.
Autopsie. Ja, nee.
Ons maak asof dit 'n mekaar autopsie.
Ja, Ryan Blumenthal saam met ons en die stories van 'n forensiese patoloog in Afrika. Ryan, thank you for being here.
It's an absolute honor to be here.
And sharing your story with us. Now, I don't like reading per se, but I really enjoyed your book because it's kind of a summary of stories, and you take us through the journey of being a forensic pathologist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so mind-boggling to think of all the stuff that you put into this book,
yep.
Which is great. So let's start at the beginning. You know, as a young Ryan running around, was never really top of mind, becoming a pathologist, was it?
That is a very good question. Thank you so much. Yes, I've been in the field for 26 years, so that's about a quarter of a century now.
Yeah.
Mm. So I've got to really think back to the beginning, when I was a rookie.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is like a rupung, eh? It's a calling.
Yeah.
It's not for everyone. The days are messy, smelly, greasy, loud, sawing, smelly. Did I mention smelly?
Yeah.
It's not for everyone. So just a rupung, eh?
Random question. You know, in all the TV series, when they take new rookie cops and stuff in to their first autopsy and they make them put Vicks or something under their nose, does something like that really help or not really? The smell.
Well, that is also a good question. So we are trained very well.
Yeah.
So I would say it's almost the training of a special forces kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're as good as your mentor,
yeah,
or tormentor. It depends what you get, a mentor,
yeah,
or a tormentor.
Yeah.
And if you're trained well, you can handle anything.
Mm.
So the metaphor I always give is that of a ship's captain. So in order to sail the seas, you need to study at the feet of a good captain.
Mm.
You need a good ship that's seaworthy. You must be able to sail all the seas, and you must know where you're sailing.
Mm.
Mm.
So you don't just get on a boat and sail.
But Ryan, let's be honest. Some people can't even go into the butchery,
yeah,
and handle that smell. Now, we're talking about bodies here. You know, some have been decomposing. Strange things are happening. Do you really ever get used to the smell?
That's why I'm more concerned about the, you know, police and detectives that immediately thrown in the deep end of our field. Whereas I come in scientifically because I first studied to be a doctor.
Yeah.
So I've been slowly desensitized into this field over years and years. I studied 23 years. So I first started with the basic sciences. I did chemistry, biology. So when I go into a death scene or a body, I go into it from a scientific and philosophical point,
yeah,
of view.
Mm.
Not see what looks like a bloody mess to people, I see through that and I'm looking for the science.
Well, the one thing that kind of struck me from your book, and you mentioned that, is you need to be literally every specialization in the medical field, mm, you need to understand. From heart surgery to, you know, whatever the other professions are. But you need to understand all of these to be able to do what, mm, you do, yet you get paid much less than the doctor at the closest hospital.
We are the catch net for society, so we have to know a little bit about everything. So we've got to know about highway design. We've got to know about ballistics. We have to know about trace evidence. We have to know everything about medicine. Anyone can die under any medical procedure, from heart surgery to neurosurgery to pediatric surgery, and I've got to know about those operations.
Mm.
And as I said in my book, when it comes to salaries, I think we get paid a little more than priests, but there's no guarantee of going to heaven afterwards.
Hectic.
That's insane. Is that why you became an author?
Is that why we're now writing books,
yes,
Ryan?
It does keep me busy, and it's actually about the communication of science.
Mm.
I'd never want to see the same death twice. To me, that is the greatest sin. This is a sonder.
Mm.
See the same death twice. You should never have the same death twice. And I mean, how many of the same deaths do we see every single day on certain roads in South Africa or in winters due to primer stoves or due to illegal connections? So we're actually public health pathologists. I wish governments would speak to forensic pathologists. The world would be a much better and safer place.
Well, that's a great idea, actually. I didn't even think of that. We're going to be back with Ryan in a second. And until ons nou nog bietjie patologie gesels.
Ja.
Forensiese patologie, daar's baie interessanthede wat ons en spesialist velde waar wat hy in gespesialiseer het, sy PhD ingekry het, maar ons sal nou weer terug wees met hom. Ons gesels vanmiddag bietjie met Ryan Blumenthal oor sy boek Autopsie Tafel, stories van 'n forensiese patoloog in Afrika. And I think it's interesting because I met a bunch of medical students years ago. And one of the things that they mentioned is they like to come and study or do some practicals in South Africa because of the high crime rate, the different kinds of crimes we have in South Africa. They get exposed to more forensic or medical situations than they would in Europe. So is that one of the reasons? Because I know you went to Europe as well. You did a bit of studying there for your medical doctor stuff, and then you came back. Was that one of the reasons why you did want to come back, just because you are so interested in a vast variety of things?
Just some numbers for your listeners, just to put them in the picture.
Mm.
So South Africa's got 64 million people at the moment. We have about 400,000 to 600,000 natural deaths a year. These people won't get autopsied. We get between 60 to 80,000 unnatural deaths per year. So we get about 72,000 unnatural deaths which will require an autopsy per year. So that there's only 80 to 90 of us in the whole country, and we're all performing between 400 to 600 autopsies per person per year. So this is forensic paradise. And what we see here, you won't see anywhere else in the world. You know, we get, for example, multiple shooting cases. The other day I had a guy shot 70 times.
Yo.
There were 70 holes in his body. So it wasn't 70 gunshots, but there were 70 holes from multiple angles. It was a taxi killing death, and there were 70 holes. You know, this can keep a man busy. And we see
there's
things
not a lot left to kind of examine. You know what the cause was, right?
Well, that's the thing. You know, we need to know from what distance, from what range, from what weaponry, if it was through an object such as the taxi or direct, how many people were involved. So it gets very deep, the science.
Now, one of the things that you mentioned in the book as well is that everything leaves a trace behind. And this is where the criminal aspect comes in, where you work with the police and give them the forensic reports and stuff. But does everything really leave a trace behind? We watch so many series where guys are wearing gloves and, you know, shaving their hair, head bald, not to leave any DNA behind. But, you know, does everything leave a trace?
This is one of my favorite topics. So my second book, Risking Life or Death, is about Locard's exchange principle. So Edmond Locard was a professor from Lyon in France in 1643, and he said every contact leaves a trace. If you go to a death scene, you'll leave something there or you'll take something with you. That's physical evidence. And we always look for trace evidence. If you go to a wedding and you're wearing glitter makeup, by the end of the wedding, everyone will be shining with glitter. And let me tell you, glitter...
Glitter is everywhere.
Glitter, I am not a fan of glitter.
Yeah.
Firstly, it gets swallowed. I've seen glitter in the intestines of dead people. Glitter is like a plastic, which is indigestible and doesn't decompose.
And it gets stuck to everything.
And
so
it goes
it
everywhere.
Too.
That's just glitter. So can you imagine everything else? So we've caught people off makeup, dandruff, chemicals, pollen. Every contact leaves a trace. And here's where it gets really weird. It's not just physical evidence. It's even ideas. Ideas can also be transferred. Some people didn't come up with that idea themselves. They came in contact with the idea. So we can trace and track ideas back to origin. COVID, we can track back to origin. We can tell you that you got it from the patient next door and not from the pizza delivery boy.
Mm. Okay, but tell me more about this idea. Because I'm interested now. What do you mean with ideas can be traced back?
Well, every contact leaves a trace. So we can I mean, we've studied all these. We've got the harmful occult units and stuff, and these ideas transfer. People get proselytized, so they're not that clever to come up with this idea themselves. They have to have come in contact with the idea. And you can trace and track ideas back to origin.
Yeah.
So it's all low cards exchange principle.
Am I allowed to ask the question about, since we're on true crime now, I've been listening to a lot of news stories again, and then you realize a lot of people, they only later think to go look for certain causes of death. So a lot of times, especially like Daisy DeMalker back in the day, didn't realize that people were poisoned. So if someone gets poisoned now, and I died, so someone poisoned me, what would require someone to actually do an autopsy if it looks like a natural death in South Africa?
All right. Well, I can give you the definition of what is an unnatural death. So in our country, we've got strict laws about what is an unnatural death. And these are any death due to a force, direct, indirect, chemical, physical, lightning, any death under anesthesia, any death as a result of an act or an omission, a dun or a lighter, or any sudden, unexplained, or frankly suspicious death. All of these can be accidents, suicides, murders, you know, where the law is involved.
Yes.
So that is an unnatural death. Now, here's where it gets fascinating. Any single death can be a murder. Any single death can be a murder.
Mm.
So, and any single death can have a toxicological substance on board. So you never know. There's two types of autopsies. Autopsies of documentation and autopsies of discovery. Sometimes you may get a case and it may look like a run-of-the-mill natural death.
Yes.
Mm.
Meanwhile, it could be a very crafty homicide.
Yes.
So we always have to keep murder in mind when we're doing these kind of cases. So it may present to us as one thing and we may find something completely different. And we have so many stories like that. There's a lot of these stories are in the book.
Mm. I love that. We got a message on the WhatsApp line who, I don't know if you know the person, but they asked, please ask Ryan what kind of magic tricks he shows us when he goes to the dentist.
My word. No, look, I have a lot of fans and people out there. And
apparently.
It is one of my hobbies. So I did study sleight of hand magic, and I've been to the World Champ several times.
Oh, and so you do a little bit of magic.
Literally a jack of all trades.
Sleight of hand. Well, I like.
Have
thinking.
You ever made a body disappear, Ryan?
No body's disappeared. But there is similarities between sleight of hand magic and catching a criminal.
Mm.
Because, you know, a magician will try and fool you.
Yeah.
And you know there's Penn and Teller fool us, and they try and catch the magician out and work out how they try to fool them. Well, that is what forensic pathology is like. So try and fool us.
I think it must be fascinating because I did... I watched this whole little thing about, you know, an untraceable bullet where guys try to see if an ice bullet, you know, could dissolve and there was no trace of for the ballistics guys and whatever. Is there anything in the world close to the perfect crime?
So I discussed the perfect murder in my book, Autopsy Teufel, which is a bestseller, may I add.
Yeah.
So you always got to assume that they know more than you. You've always got to assume that they're cleverer than you. You've got to assume that they know all the methods.
Mm.
And over the years, we've had some crazy cases. I don't want to give too many ideas out on the airwaves, you know, because as I say, low cards exchange principle, the stuff will shut.
It's transferring.
It's transferring, and then next thing we see an outbreak of these cases, which we've had. In the past, I've given interviews and I've mentioned a method or two, and then suddenly in Pretoria we see these methods. So I'm very sensitive now about sharing certain information with the general
public. We
don't
have too many crazies, at least.
I hope so.
Listening.
Yeah.
There's always a bell curve. There's always a bell curve at play.
Yeah.
So, but just know that we leave no stone unturned. People ask me, what is a good forensic pathologist? And it's not necessarily the oldest. It's not necessarily the one with the most degrees or the one with the most experience. The best forensic pathologist actually has the best senses.
Mm.
These are people that have OCD, like obsessive compulsive disorder. Mm. They go through it not meticulously, not military, mercenary.
Mm.
I have colleagues that have discovered things that have blown my mind, like melanoma in the spinal cord.
Wow.
I had a case of a wasp sting from Pretoria North kill a 42-year-old male, and he died of a syndrome called Conus syndrome, which is so rare. But yet my one colleague had read about Conus syndrome, which is a coronary artery plaque rupture from a bee sting or wasp sting. And this was the first one ever mentioned in literature. So we've got really special people out there that have read a lot, that have got very good senses, good eyesight. It's the smallest things is how you catch criminals and murderers.
Do you all have each other on speed dial?
We speak to each other. We've got good connections here in South Africa. There's places in the world where they don't talk to each other. We've got a very good system here in South Africa.
Good. Yeah.
And do you sometimes find that you'll have people from overseas contacting you guys to say, listen, we have this case and we're not sure what we should be looking for? Any suggestions? Because you guys might have seen this.
Well, it is like a brotherhood. Last month, we had the biggest forensic conference on the African continent here in Pretoria at the CSIR. And we all speak to each other. We all got the journals. If there's something new and novel or original, we publish it so we all know what's happening. So if there's an outbreak of some new type of method out there, we want to know about it.
Mm.
So this requires lifelong study and curiosity.
No, because criminals get smarter as well.
That's what's happening. And there's AR, and there's CSI Miami, and CSI New York, and people know it's out there, so we got to know what the public knows.
Yeah.
Wel, ons is nou weer terug met Ryan en ons gas op die groot trek vanmiddag, Ryan Blumenthal. Hy's 'n forensiese patoloog en hy het die boek geskryf, Autopsie Tafel, stories van 'n forensiese patoloog in Afrika. Now, we mentioned this off-air, Ryan, but Africa is a very interesting place in terms of what you get to see forensically, medically, and surely because we have the big five and people going out to nature and hiking. We had somebody come tell us about boomslange in Pretoria that I didn't even know about not too long ago on the show. But talk to me about animal injuries and snakes and animal-related deaths.
So we have some pathognomonically, dis die woord.
Wag, sê geweer.
Pathognomonies. Yeah, pathognomonic. It means it's specific pathology to our area.
Oh, wow.
For Africa and South Africa. So we see things, obviously, that other places in the world won't see. So we've got ways of killing in South Africa that are classically South African.
Oh, wow.
So, for example, you know, necklacing, Temek, Aldicarb, mob assault. We get, these are classically South African ways of dying.
Yes.
You don't really get them anywhere else in the world. And then we've got our own fauna and flora deaths. So we've got certain plants and animals that are really proudly South African ways to die.
You know? Tell us a little bit about that, because people normally say, you know, don't go to Australia because everything there is trying to kill you.
True.
But now that you've mentioned this, it seems like we have the same situation in South Africa. Even the plants.
We have poisonous plants. We've got dangerous animals. Strange enough, if I were to ask you what is the animal that we see the most cases of at autopsy, what would you think that would be? The mammal that kills the most people besides human.
Mammal?
Yeah.
In Africa, I would say, think a crocodile or something. But it's probably a bug, mosquito.
No, mammal.
Mammal.
Mosquito are not a mammal.
No, they're not also a mammal, but if they were bigger, I'd be scared.
I was also going there. It's like a dassie or something.
You won't believe this, but it's actually just the dog.
A hunt?
Most of my animal cases, the most animal cases we get is the Canis lupus familiaris, our dog.
You're not allowed to break my heart now.
Dogs, so dogs kill more people, but cats infect more people.
You see, I knew cats were worse.
So, but the most cases we see animal-related or dog-related. And it's usually the vulnerable, the elderly, the young, or packs of dogs, or people that breed dogs for fighting. So, and certain breeds are more dangerous than other breeds, but that's the one animal death we see the most of here, dog-related fatality.
Huh.
And would that then be from biting, or would that be virus, or like, what do you call it? Soos hondsdolheid, when people get hondsdolheid and stuff like
that. We've dealt with hondsdolheid cases, rabies.
Yeah.
So that is one of the most feared infections of humankind.
Yeah,
it's almost uniformly deadly if you get bitten by an animal with rabies. But most of the time, it's sharp force trauma injuries with complications.
So in your book, you also mentioned that, you know, pets sometimes give away what's been happening. And you've learned to observe what the pets are doing when you get to a crime scene. And they would sometime tell you a little bit more about the owner and that kind of thing. Would you care to elaborate?
I think there would be a whole book just on pets on death scenes.
Mm.
By watching people's pets and people's interactions with their pets, you can tell so much about the person. And watching over 26 years animals on death scenes, you get an insight that AI would never come up with. You cannot imagine the stuff that we've seen over the years. Mm. So, and there's so many stories. But yeah, we watch the pets on scenes and we watch how they act and react.
You want to give us an example? Like Tani Fifi Sawenki, but nobody for their shit.
Well, there was one case that still gives me goose pimples till today.
Mm.
It was someone that was murdered by her lodger, and she had a whole lot of little dachshunds, and they were on her body, protecting her body. And we couldn't really process the scene or even take the body away. And we tried everything to try and get these dogs away from the person, you know, using even a Russian sausage. But the dogs would not budge.
Because it's a dachshund. You should have used sauerkraut.
Yeah, maybe. However, they called in the SAPS dog unit and they had a dog whisperer. And within 5 minutes, this captain had the alpha dog wrapped in a blanket and all of them followed afterwards in single line. It was goose pimple stuff.
Yeah.
Wow.
Krijle die wenkie sal
weg. Yeah. Because they were messing up the crime scene with bloody paw prints, etc.
So obviously, they care for their owners. They try and hang around. They're also grieving the animals. But they are contaminating a crime scene, and there could be some evidence that stays behind.
You know, sometimes they can even help diagnose and help us find the cause of death. So we've seen some tragic stuff over the years. We've seen people kill themselves with all their pets, suicide, and then they kill their pets also with them.
Yes.
So there's so much to be said about people's pets and death. There's a whole book in that just by itself.
And snake bites, because that's the one thing I'm most worried
about
in South Africa. It's like, I don't like snakes at all, and hunting season's upon us now. So how many snake bite-related deaths do you come across?
In my 26 years, I have mainly done autopsies on black mamba cases.
Really?
Those are the ones that I've done the most on. Also crazy cases, different ways that snake can kill people. One time we actually had, with Locard's exchange principle, as we alluded to in the beginning of the show, there was someone working in a snake venom facility, and the snake was expressing its venom on the glass of the cage. And what happens is it dries out this venom and aerosolizes. And you breathe it in, and it sensitizes the mucosa of your membranes, of your nose. So this person was becoming sensitized to snake venom over time by a Locard's exchange principle. And then one day there was a small exposure to just a fang, but it wasn't enough to inject the venom. And then it was a total anaphylactic reaction over chronic exposure.
That's insane.
Yeah, so we've seen really crazy cases of Locard's exchange principle at autopsy. And South Africa, we've seen lion cases, leopard cases, elephant cases, buffalo cases. It's by the grace of God that you're going to the Bushveld.
Well, actually, I'm not a jag season now that I did weet.
You need not onnodig deur baie te veel gesteek word nie.
Of pas op vir die swart mamba.
Of vir die swart mamba.
Mm. Of other not so much.
No, I'm mamba. Out.
Pas op. Luister, ons moet bietjie gesels oor weerlig. Aangesien hier so bietjie van 'n storm in die lig ook is. Moenie buitentoe gaan nie. Ryan gaan nou vir sê hoekom. Ongelooflike interessante onderhoud met ons forensiese patoloog Ryan Bloementhal. Wat ons bietjie vertel van sy boek Autopsie Tafel. En ek kan nie die boek neersit nie, want ek lees die hele tyd ietsie nuuts raak wat hy oor gepraat het. Dit is ongelooflik interessant.
Ja, en as jy die boek oopmaak, sal jy sien, daar's soveel lettertjies agter sy naam van die hoeveelheid swat wat hy gedoen het.
Jy
weet nie. And one of them is your PhD in lightning, because you find lightning fascinating.
Yes, I did my PhD through Department of Electrical Engineering at WITS.
Really?
Lightning, yeah. So that was 8 years work, yeah.
Can you tell us why it fascinates you so much? Like, what effect does lightning actually have on the body?
Well, lightning is as deadly as it is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It affects all people, no matter what race, age, gender you are. Lightning affects us all animals, all species on Earth. The pathology of lightning is fascinating. So it's called coronapathology, which is the pathology of trauma of lightning on the human or animal body. And we see weird stuff. So we had the show Lightning Pathologist on People's Weather, and I've done about 90 autopsies on lightning in my career. So it's fascinating. It's multi-physics phenomenon. We also need to really have some public health safety in South Africa when thunder roars go indoors.
Let's
get indoors, swimming teams, rugby, soccer. Just the inconvenience of stopping the game is less than the inconvenience of a dead or injured player.
So just the biggest thing is I'm a golfer. And when the weather's like this, you know, you want a nice cool down the golf course, but normally we have the sirens go off and telling everyone, listen, thunder on the horizon. Don't put your stocky in the lip.
Yes.
You know, how many golfers have you had out of those 90 lightning strikes?
Yeah, we've had a couple of golfers.
Julle ons hoor nou. Moenie golf speel as dit reën nie.
Yeah, just get indoors into a fully enclosed surface like a house or, you know, any, just don't be outdoors in a thunderstorm. It really kills you in 1 millisecond, and the stories are tragic. I have to deal with them. I have to speak to families, go to schools. It's an unbelievable phenomenon that affects us all. And we're a very prone area to lightning, the Highveld in South Africa.
Is it true that you can see the entry on top of a person's head and then you can see where it came out by their little twinkie?
Yeah, so there is a lot of pathology with lightning. So there's a sign called the tiptoe sign. So sometimes on the base of the feet or the shoe, you can see where the lightning exited the body. And even if you've got leather shoes, these shoes tear and tatter. And I mean, you can imagine how tough it must be to tear a leather boot.
Yeah. Mm.
The forces are unbelievable. We can hear thunder from 25 kilometers away. And around lightning is a blast wave. It's like a bomb. And that blast wave explodes and decays into sound, which we know as thunder. And within the first 10 meters around the luminous channel, it is like being exposed to a bomb blast. Because it blows the clothing off. You get ruptured eardrums. It
Don't
causes
take
shrapnel.
Chances.
No.
Have you seen that YouTube video of the guy walking down the street and then the lightning pitches him on the head? And then he's out for a couple of minutes and he's wearing slops. And then he gets up and he walks like 2 feet. And then the lightning strikes him again.
Yeah, so there's a lot of fake news out there. And that, I think, is a mythological video that's out there. I don't think that's real. So we've discussed a lot of these things. I don't know why people do this. It's a phenomenon. Sometimes we'll get something that's trending on YouTube and someone has actually gone out of their way to create this and it's not real. So we've, as scientists, we need to know what's real science and what's fake science, what's real and what's noise.
You probably hate those TikTok challenges that the young teens do that are really stupid and probably going to kill you.
We have seen some of those deaths, yes.
Because there's one part of your book, Easy Ways of Dying, you know, Ways of Dying. There's part one and part two. And the one that stood out to me the most was something as onskuldig as a gran that was giving a hug to her grandchild. And the kid died instantly. What causes something like that?
All right, so for your listeners, there's a phenomenon called INCA, I-N-C-A, instantaneous neurogenic cardiac arrest. Instantaneous means instantaneous. Neurogenic means it's through the nerves. Cardiac arrest, you have a heart attack. The old name for this in the old textbooks was vasovagal cardiac arrest or sympathetic cardiac arrest. And there are so many scenarios where this can happen. So we've had, so the first case ever in the literature was from my hero, a guy called Sir Sidney Smith. He described a soldier who playfully tweaked his girlfriend's neck on the dance floor and she dropped dead. The next case was this granny that went to kiss her grandchild and touched the corroded bodies just under the neck and the grandchild dropped dead. We've seen people die from too tight a neck collars from turning their head. And we've even seen there's this bone that comes out the base of your skull called the stylohyoid process. People with prolonged or lengthy stylohyoid processes, it's called Eagle syndrome. You can go fact check me, but they just turn their head and they die. Extreme pain can cause sudden death. Cold water to certain parts of your body can kill you. We've got some strange stuff about us humans that can kill us without time to even bruise. It's instantaneous neurogenic cardiac arrest. It's a fascinating topic.
Very, but how gereeld sien mense dit? Like for you, now with all of, let's say, the pathology reports that have been done per year.
So
how often do you see cases like that?
So we actually see a lot. For example, that's the mechanism of death that's the most common in hanging, is an instantaneous neurogenic cardiac arrest, because we get the body and there's almost no signs on the body, which means they died almost instantaneous.
Yeah.
And there are other cases where we get INCA cases. Yeah, I can't go into all of them on air.
Is that like a pressure point thing? Sorry, we can end off with that.
Well, as we're sitting here today, we're in balance between our sympathetic nervous system and our relaxed parasympathetic nervous system. If one of them should suddenly dominate for whatever reason, you die. We don't understand this.
So we're actually quite fragile.
There's even cases in nature, you know, when impalas are being taken apart by wild dogs, that there's hardly any blood on the ground because it's dead before it even gets, the heart has stopped.
Jeez.
So it's an INCA death. It's an instantaneous neurogenic cardiac arrest.
Now, my main question is, listening to this, and me and Lisa spoke about this before the show, is this is not natural, Ryan. You shouldn't be exposed to these many dead bodies. Are you desensitized, you know, emotionally? How do you handle something like this? Because you still need to remain human, you know?
Well, I think we become more sensitive as we go on in this field. And as I wrote in the book, the average human will see maybe one or two or three dead people in their entire life, because death is actually very well hidden from the living. We keep death very far away. However, we have something like 20 to 30 cases a day. So if you come home and you say, you know, how was your day, honey? And then today I had, you know, a rape homicide case, a mob assault case, a death of a child, a death of an elder. You know, that's totally unnatural for the normal public, but it's a totally normal day for us. And we have to be very sensitive and aware of this. So we always have tea with each other as forensic pathologists every day at 9:30 and 3:30, where we talk to each other, counsel each other, watch each other. We go on holidays regularly. We watch for mental health. But we're very aware of this. And we must understand the reasons why we went into this field. And these are the reasons that you have to call out in your head when you're doing this, because some days are tough. You know, you don't want to go in there. You wake up, you've got a good morning, and now you've got to go into the mortuary, and you've got to deal with tragedies.
So it's not something like you'd invite me and Lisa to come and, you know, job shadow for a day.
It's not Disneyland.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you'd.
But you also mentioned that in South Africa specifically, we need more people in this profession.
South Africa has currently got 80 to 90 forensic pathologists that are board certified. However, we need about 380 for our population, and we need 2 to 3 assistants per pathologist. That would be paradise. So we're all working very hard here. We need more people in the field, and we need to stop losing people, immigrating, etc. So the amount of people coming into the field in the next 10 and a half years is less than the amount of people that are going to retire in the next 10 and a half years.
Big problem.
What does an assistant to a pathologist do? Do they, like, wash the bodies and, like...
We need assistance. It's hard work, this. Bodies are tough. They're heavy. To move them, to break rigor mortis, to open them, this is hard work.
Because somewhere in the book as well, you mentioned that you've done this where the power goes off, then, you know...
Yes.
Sometimes you also...
No water.
These aerosols that you mentioned. You can't use the electric equipment because, the, you know, bones, they shoot up stuff and blood, and there's viruses and stuff going around. So you have to use a handsaw.
Well, it is very risky, firstly. So, I mean, there's infection. So HIV/AIDS lives for 16.5 days after death. TB is very infectious. It's actually more infectious in the dead than the living. So we've had more pathologists get TB than respiratory physicians or TB experts. In fact, the person that invented the stethoscope got TB, the person that invented histology got TB, and my favorite author, D.H. Lawrence, died of TB. TB is our biggest risk. There's aerosolized generating procedures, so we are at risk every single day. There's hot potato cases. Someone may have been killed due to mafia or political cases, so we're always worried about that. And then working in South Africa, there's load shedding. Sometimes there's no water. Sometimes people are on strike. So you've got to really be ready for anything in this field.
Yeah. Listen.
Dupi, before you say anything else, just one or two lessons for the living. The biggest ones you picked up shortly.
Yeah. Okay, so I would tell all our listeners, there's no reason to be out after midnight in South Africa.
Yeah.
That would be lesson number one. When I read the files, it's always 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m. Just there's no reason to be out after midnight. Yeah.
Don't do it.
That would be one of my biggest lessons.
Daar's nog 'n hele paar wat hy in die boek ook mention, maar ons gaan laat jy dit self lees, want ons is choosing the right life.
Jy wil dit lees. Ek en Doopie het altyd al gelees en jy kry boeke wat lekker is om te lees. Hierdie is 'n lekker boek om te lees.
As jy hou van hierdie tipe goeders, Ryan Blumenthal, Autopsie Tafel, studies van 'n forensiese patoloog in Afrika. This is available in English and Afrikaans.
Dis korrek, ja.
So gaan lees dit en die lekker ding van Ryan is hy so bietjie soos ek en Lisi. Ons wil vinnig by die storie uitkom dat ons by die volgende storie kan uitkom. So hy deel al hierdie persoonlike staaltjies baie vinnig, baie in diepte en hy sê dit soos wat dit is. So regtig een van die beste boeke wat ek so ver hierdie jaar gelees het.
100%.
Dankie dat jy kom kuier, Ryan, en dat jy vir ons hierdie staaltjies saamgebring het.
Kuier Maandag tot Vrydag saam Doopie en Nina. 3 tot 6, net hier op die Groot Trek op Groot FM 90.5.